David Thorold is a curator at the Verulamium Museum, and the first question I'm going to ask him is, what does a curator do and how many are there in this particular museum?
Well, there are two working in the St Albans Museum service. There's myself, and I deal with everything from prehistory up to medieval, and then my colleague deals with everything from medieval onwards. So I get almost 200,000 years of history, but my colleague has all the modern 20th century stuff, and there's a lot more material to deal with.
So you've got a lot more time, he's got a lot more material. What do you mean by prehistory? Just help me to clarify, what is prehistory?
Prehistory is essentially before you get the written word. So anything historical is really approximately from the birth of Jesus on, when you tend to have written documents available. And prehistoric is broadly earlier than that, when you're not looking at so many potential sources.
So now you're at this museum, which of course is here because Verulamium is one of the most important Roman settlements. Why did they choose this location?
Well, the Romans picked it really because there was a settlement here by the time the Romans got here. The reason why that settlement was here was largely because when Julius Caesar visited in 55 and 54 BC, he conducted a series of raids and tried to sort of bring the British tribes under a bit more control. And one thing he did, although they didn't form a permanent Roman presence in the country at the time, they started trading with the Britons. And Caesar altered the trade routes, and more trade started coming through Hertfordshire. And the site at Verulamium was basically at a river crossing, a marshy area on a shallow valley. It was a good crossing point, and that started to bring all the trade and transport through. And it seems to have grown up from around that point, from about 50-40 BC onwards.
Was this before or after the Romans decided to have a city at London, or Londinium?
Oh, Verulamium was going before London. We are earlier than London. So yeah, London was very much a Roman invention. There doesn't seem to have been any major settlement there before. The Romans realised it was a deep water port, so it was fantastic. You could bring your boats up the river and load them straight away. And if you're moving goods around the Roman Empire, if you can do it by water, it's faster and smoother. So it's always the best way to travel if you can.
And what sort of size was this in the beginning as a Roman settlement? Was it a trading post or a city or what? Where does it fit?
Well, we have pretty good ideas of how Verulamium grew, because as it's not built over, we've had a number of excavations and surveys over the years which have given us quite a good picture. So it started from a fairly small basis of sort of 60 acres or so, and grew up to over 200. And at its peak, it was the third largest town in Roman Britain, and I suspect it was always, at different stages, one of those top three. It always seems to have been very important. Initially, when the Romans moved in, it seemed to have been politically important. The local tribe were friendly and pro-Roman, and that was a useful political statement. And Verulamium seems to have prospered right from the get-go. So we had a very large forum and basilica built in the first century AD. And the town was built up, I think, as a model town to show the other tribes what the Romans could do for them, essentially.
Where was the basilica?
The basilica is basically where the Church of St Michael's is now, down in St Michael's. The basilica is essentially the sort of the council offices, the Lord Courts of the Roman Empire, and attached to that, roughly where the vicar's house, the vicarage is where the forum would be, which would be the marketplace, and those two are normally together. And yeah, the basilica was essentially the biggest one built in Britain, which gives you an idea of the status the Romans gave to Verulamium at the time. What's interesting is that from what we know from excavations and surveys, St Michael's Church stands where the basilica was, and the basilica itself stands where there was an earlier Iron Age structure of some kind. And we don't know what that was, because the modern church is on top of it and we can't really get to excavate it, but there is a very large ditch running around that area which is prehistoric. So there's something big there.
Are you making guesses what it was?
Well, we tend to call it the Chieftain's Palace, which is probably the best guess. What's interesting is that when you look at the layout of the Roman town and you see Watling Street running through, Watling Street takes a decided diversion. If it had carried on its normal straight line, as the Romans are supposed to always build, it would have gone straight through this feature. And we suspect that at the time, it wasn't, again, politically very wise for the Romans to demolish this settlement of one of their allies.
And you mentioned the Forum. Now, sometimes I think of the Forum in Rome as being a place for political arguments, but it's not. It's a market, isn't it? Is it?
It's broadly a market, but it's a big meeting place, and there's all sorts of activities go on there, but it's more formally dealt with as the marketplace of Verulamium. And, of course, Verulamium would have been a big market town with Watling Street running through. You've got merchants and traders passing through. The area around here is farmland from the prehistoric period onwards, so everybody's producing goods, crops, cattle, and all those leather from the animals, meat, all the grain is being sold on the marketplace. So it's a big trading centre.
And then therefore that would draw in the population. I mean, it was a trading centre for the surrounding area as well as for through traffic. So people will be heading up in the Dunstable direction, as it were.
Yes, absolutely.
And also back to London?
The trade is going in both directions, and merchants would often have a route. So if they're going by land, you would travel up to Port of London, disembark, you could travel for a day along the roads, and at the end of one day's travel you would have reached Verulamium. And that's kind of a lucky coincidence, but again, that's a reason why Verulamium becomes such an important centre. It's a great point on the road, and Watling Street is a main road, and if you're going on a circuit up north, looping round and coming back again, it's always a good point to stop where you know you're going to be secure at night. There's a safe, secure location to be based.
You said earlier that it was one of the largest, it's always been one of the largest Roman settlements. How many people are we talking about here?
Probably not huge, a few thousand really. What we tend to look at is that towns are sort of unusual in the Roman period. Essentially, you've got a population living off the land and farming. And Britain, certainly the southeast of Britain, is very successful in that sense. So we think that by the Iron Age, you've actually got a population level similar to the 18th century, in that you need a lot of people to collect the harvest in. So you must have quite a lot of people living here. But of course, everybody lives spread out across the county because you don't all live in a city and then commute out to your fields to do the daily work. You all live in small farmsteads and hamlets on the appropriate area where you live. And they're very hard to find archaeologically. So we suspect there's a big population out there, but we don't really find those buildings very often unless we do a large-scale excavation. Whereas towns, once they start to develop, are much more recognisable, and you can start to locate those things.
Because you mentioned the Basilica and the Forum, and there's also the theatre, the Hypocaust, and presumably lots and lots of houses.
Absolutely, yes.
Was the theatre built at the same time as the...?
The theatre's a little bit later. It goes in about 120 AD, so you basically have the Romans arriving here in the early 40s. The Romans arrive, and you get a small settlement initially built, and that expands over the next 60 years or so. The theatre itself doesn't seem to have been one of the high priorities, but there was land set aside for it to go in. So there's town planning going on, and they always intended to build one. And it was simply, you know, once you get round to the next item on your list, that building goes in.
And the function of the theatre was entertainment. It was not a political meeting place.
It's got a range of them. It is, as you say, entertainment. You could have almost anything going on in there. In fact, the only thing you don't tend to find happening in the theatre is the equivalent of Russell Crowe rocking up and fighting other people in a gladiatorial style environment, because those are amphitheatres, and amphitheatres are round structures. But our theatre is almost round. It's a very unusual shape that you tend to see in Gaul and Britain, and it's a regional variation. So it does look quite like an amphitheatre, but it is a theatre. So you'd be looking at entertainments, mimes, plays. You may have had things like bear baiting even potentially going on in there. And you'd have had a lot of events tied to the rituals of the different religions that were operated in the town, because certainly in the adjoining block of land to the theatre, there is a very large classical Roman temple, and that is almost certainly built there on purpose again, so there is links between the two.
So the Romans arrived in the 40s AD, and they hadn't been established very long before Boudica came thundering in and knocked it all down again. I mean, she set light to it, is that right?
Yes, absolutely, yes. Boudica is 60 or 61 AD, so they're here less than 20 years before that happens. It does seem to have been a pretty cataclysmic mistake by the Romans they came to Britain. The southeast seems to have been broadly friendly because those were the areas that were trading with the Romans, and the elite had largely decided, I think, that they would be better off being part of the empire than out of it. Further north and west, there was a lot more resistance. We've always looked over the years to see if there's a fort at Verulamium, and we've never found evidence for one. So it may be there and we haven't found it, but the evidence we have suggests that there isn't a military presence here. And that seems to be something that happened in a lot of the southeast. The Romans were quite confident that the southeast was secure, and they moved further north and west. And then, of course, you have the trouble with Boudicca, which has a lot of its basis essentially in sort of taxation and money, and essentially the Romans seem to have mistreated the locals who were given a certain status and a deal under the Romans. And even the Roman authors who talk about this actually say the Romans didn't treat them very well, which is kind of unusual. You know, history is written by the winners, and they don't normally admit to their own mistakes. So they must have been doing something fairly bad if the Romans admitted to it. And the end result is Colchester, London, and then Verulamium are all attacked and burnt down and destroyed. At Verulamium, we don't have a huge amount of evidence for the Boudiccan fire, simply because what we have over the site is a much larger area which is built over later and has a lot of archaeology on top of it. So we haven't excavated down far enough, deep enough, quite often, to actually find much evidence of the Boudiccan revolt. But we do have burnt material from that period, which is probably tied to it. But we always have to be a little bit careful, because the early town was also full of blacksmiths. And if you dig a small area and you find a burnt building, it's equally likely that it's a burnt down smithy that's just caught fire accidentally. So we have to be a little bit cautious. But yes, she certainly got here, and the town seems to have been heavily destroyed by her. What we don't seem to have is evidence for the population suffering badly. The city itself was destroyed, but we think the population managed to get out into the countryside, because after what had happened at the other cities, they'd have known what was coming if they stayed put.
So after Boudicca, and she goes away, and then there's a big battle and she gets killed and all the rest of it, and then the town of Verulamium was rebuilt.
Yes, absolutely.
And became bigger again. Yep. And more and more powerful and important. At what point did people start taking interest in this? I'm talking here through the next 1500, 1600 years, whatever it is.
Well, it's always been known about. As far as we can trace the records back, there's never a period when people were surprised that there was a city here. And that's not really surprising when you think that there are still sections of the town wall standing. So in the sort of 16th, 17th centuries, you have William Camden and John Leland, and the early antiquarians are all visiting and mapping the town and recording it. And one of these antiquarians says that the best experts on the Roman town of Verulamium are the farmers and ploughboys, because they're always turning up coins and bits of mosaics, and they're so familiar with them, they know more about them than we do. So it's a site that has always remained in the public knowledge. What they probably lacked was the finer detail, because by the medieval period, the abbey has already established itself on the hill, and probably by the 11th century or so, the abbey has gained ownership of old Verulamium and is using it as a quarry for the abbey itself. And if you look at the main tower of St Albans Abbey, it's largely Roman brick. So they would have known where the walls were, and they could probably work out where the roads were through crop marks in the summer, where the dry grass would parch off and you could see a colour difference. But they probably wouldn't have known much more than that. So we've got a lot more data in the last 100 years that we've been able to add back in.
Because the real breakthrough came, what, in the 1930s, is that...?
Yes, that's right. The 20th century was really when archaeology started going. There were some excavations in the late 19th century, and the theatre was located, I think, right at the end of the 19th century. But essentially, it was the 20th when it really started, and the big impetus really was Mortimer Wheeler's excavations in the 1930s. And that was arranged. Essentially, Lord Verulam donated what is now Verulamium Park to the council, who provided the opportunity for Mortimer Wheeler to come in and excavate the site over 5 years. And Wheeler was one of the first sort of professional, if you like, archaeologists who had a system. and organised his digs and recorded everything in great detail. And so the discoveries he made went into an early publication, and then the material itself has all found its way into the museum.
And it was on the basis of that that then the museum was established, presumably not what we see today.
No, that's right. The original intention was to hopefully put everything on open display. They sort of say the Pompeii of Britain, and unfortunately British weather doesn't really work like that. So it was realised quite quickly that if they tried to leave material on display, it would simply weather and break apart. During the 5 years of excavations, they had a lot of interest. There's a lot of Pathé newsreel. There are photographs of members of the public going on guided tours around the site, and it was clearly popular. And so they started looking then at the likelihood of having a museum. And initially they had a small shed which contained some of the mosaics and the best finds. But it was decided in the 1930s that a permanent museum was in fact the way to go. And I think it was 1938 when they managed to build and open it. So they did quite well.
And since then it's been redeveloped and it's been expanded. And you've got much more space. What's the theme of the museum?
We call it the Museum of Daily Life in Roman Britain now. And that is essentially because what we have excavated over the years is lots and lots of the typical things that we find. And we do have some unusual and outstanding objects like the mosaics and the wall plasters and figurines. But what we really have an advantage over many Roman sites here is that because the town has not been built over, there have been enough fairly large-scale excavations that we've got a lot of very typical objects. And that fits in very well with the schools, because if you want to sort of educate children about the Roman world, it's all very well seeing some of the amazing and unusual exceptional things, but that doesn't really tell you what it's like for everybody else. So Verulamium is a really good example of what a normal town in the Roman Empire would have been like.
Okay, look, David, we've run out of time, and there's a lot I want to ask you, so I'm going to ask you to come back and talk to us about one specific area, which is the Sundridge Hoard, and also perhaps to tell us a little bit about yourself, because I'm interested to see how does somebody become an archaeologist?
Certainly, so, yeah.
Okay, thanks.